In Ramallah, Palestine, on March 31st, a new government was sworn into office. One by one, the chosen ministers approached a podium where they made their oath. The new government was needed when the former Prime Minister of Palestine, Mohammed Shataya, announced his resignation on February 26th. As each of the new members of the cabinet was sworn in, 17 men and 4 women, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas watched over proceedings. This week, we look at the Palestinian Authority in the wake of the war on Gaza. What is the Palestinian Authority doing to end the violence and promote Palestinian liberty? How do Palestinians feel about the ruling authority? And is it time for reforms and for President Abbas to step aside, or for the institution as a whole to be dissolved? My name is Hugo Goodridge, and you're listening to The New Arab Voice. The resignation of Mohammed Shataya as Prime Minister came in the wake of the devastating and ongoing war in Gaza. Announcing his departure to the press on February 26th, he said,
"This decision comes in the wake of the political, security and economic developments related to the aggression against our people in the Gaza Strip and the unprecedented escalation in the West Bank and Jerusalem, and related to the fierce and unprecedented attack on our people, our Palestinian cause, and our political system."
During the handover ceremony, the new Prime Minister, Mohammed Mustafa, thanked his predecessor for his work and expressed his intention to continue on the same path. Prime Minister Mohammed Mustafa will now lead the government of the Palestinian Authority, with Mahmoud Abbas continuing to serve as its president. Before we continue, it's worth having a quick refresher on the Palestinian Authority, or PA. The PA was born out of the Oslo Accords of the 1990s.
And it was established as a temporary governing body that would take over some of the responsibilities from direct military occupation of the Israelis.
This is Omar Rahman. Omar is a fellow at the Middle East Council on Global Affairs.
And it was kind of an embryonic organization that over a period of 5 years was supposed to come into existence as a state. And the Palestinian Liberation Organization, and the Israelis were supposed to negotiate final status issues in that period. And that never happened. So the Palestinian Authority has gone on in existence for 30 years, well past its mandate as a temporary, very parochial governing body in the occupied territories.
The fact that the PA was designed to be a temporary governing body is important. Initially designed to be a step on the path to statehood and liberation, it is now viewed by some to be entwined with the very occupation it was designed to end.
And the Palestinian Authority now exists almost totally untethered from the peace process that was supposed to allow it to transition to a state, from a plausible vision of two states, of a Palestinian state. But yet, at the same time, it has continued to carry on its obligations under the Oslo Accords, you know, most importantly, its security coordination with the Israelis. And as it's carried on those things, you know, totally detached from its raison d'être, you know, its purpose, that has eroded its legitimacy in the eyes of its own public. And it, you know, and in effect, it is seen as complicit with the Israeli occupation regime, the Israeli apartheid regime, because again, it exists detached from what it was meant to do, and it's really just serving the regime as it continues to colonize the occupied territories.
These failures have in turn reflected badly on the PA's leaders.
Because it has not been able to fulfill its mandate and become a state, its leaders have also, you know, lacked any kind of willingness to transition its strategy, to change the PA, to offer a new vision for the Palestinians, and that has also eroded their legitimacy.
Politically speaking, the PA has failed to uphold the remit for which it was designed, impacting its legitimacy as a governing body. But they are a governing body, overseeing all number of civil affairs and some security affairs. Could we say that they are an effective body in that regard?
But it's no secret that the PA has been under tremendous pressure internally and externally.
This is Obada Shataya. Obada is the CEO of the Institute for Social and Economic Progress. The Institute for Progress is based in Ramallah and conducts social science research in Palestine. Obada and his team have overseen a number of polls across Palestine using advanced social science research techniques.
From not being able to pay salaries, to being criticized for collaborating with the Israelis, to also not being able to hold elections and continue the democratic process. So was it effective? I get my passport pretty quickly when I apply, if you think about it that way. But at the same time, for instance, the health and education systems, which are critical systems in any country, have been suffering quite a bit. COVID, together with a lot of strikes after COVID, and then government's inability to pay salaries meant that education didn't do too well before the war. Health as well, the health sector in Palestine has not been performing to the best of its abilities, and it's a top priority for the people.
Public sector salaries have been an issue for years now. This is due to a multitude of factors: dwindling donor aid, high inflation, continued knock-on effects from the COVID-19 pandemic, and of course, Israel, who have routinely withheld vital tax revenues. Elections are another one of the intense failings of the PA. Parliamentary elections have not been held since 2006, and presidential elections have not been held since 2005. Elections have not been held for a number of reasons, too many to list here, but long story short, the blame for the lack of elections lies with the political leadership and not the Palestinian people.
Looking forward, we hope that the Palestinian Authority leadership and the Palestinian Authority in general will be able to, one, hold elections sometime soon so the people can have their word, and so that the Palestinian Authority, the Palestinian government, can become truly a representative of its people. So this is something that the PA can do and should do in the near future. It also should position itself and its relationships in the region in a way that can serve reviving the economic development in Palestine and the reconstruction of Gaza effectively.
Perhaps we're being unfair. Palestinians are facing the most right-wing and hostile Israeli government in recent times. And of course, the brutal war on Gaza.
Yes, the situation is no doubt difficult. I wouldn't say it's impossible, but the Palestinians in their history, in the history of the National Liberation Movement, have faced many moments that seemed impossible. If you go back to the 1950s and 1960s, what the early leaders of Fatah and some of the other factions did against all odds to resurrect the national movement of the Palestinians, it was extremely dire as a situation, and yet they persisted. They were, you know, extremely determined, and we haven't seen any of that.
Through their polling, Obada and his team have been on the ground and asking Palestinians what they think of the PA.
And we asked what the PA priorities should be, and surprisingly, so that question we asked in the West Bank, not in Gaza, and surprisingly, the priorities were more domestic and local needs, such as keeping safety and security, safety and stability, the economy, and so on. So these were the priorities that people pointed to.
There are obvious intense domestic and local needs in Palestine: schools, homes, jobs, stability, to name a few. But what about the occupation? That's got to score pretty highly.
And some of our analysis actually is that people didn't ask the PA to end the occupation or to liberate Palestine because they don't expect them to be able to do that, in a sense. So the people are like playing this pragmatic role of asking the PA for what it can do. You know what I mean? They don't have massive expectations at this point from the Palestinian Authority.
This isn't an acceptance of occupation, nor is it an end to the hopes for a free Palestinian state.
Obviously, the people have not given up on ending the occupation or living in an independent and sovereign contiguous viable Palestinian state. I think what's happening is, even let's take my generation as an example. I actually, at one point around 2010-11, when there was some movement here and there, President Abbas went to the UN to ask for Palestinian recognition. He tried to negotiate a thing or two with Olmert. I actually believe that at one point that we'll be able to get to a two-state solution in the near future. But then as negotiations stalled, as the situation deteriorated, and as, you know, the kind of the unfortunate reality, of negotiations not being effective, the peace process being a process without the peace, these things have, you know, Palestinians have lived this kind of messaging and reality for a very long time. Only thing you see is expansion of settlements, situation going backward, not forward, and Palestinians losing, not winning. And the PA is basically failure to secure, of course, anything with Israel in terms of negotiations and a two-state solution, or, you know, even advancement in expanding Area C. What we're getting is the opposite. Yeah, people don't have these expectations anymore.
According to the polling by the Institute for Progress, the Palestinian people haven't given up on liberation. Just the idea that the PA, in its current makeup, could secure it for them. So can the PA be reformed?
There are differing opinions among Palestinians. There's one side of people, many, who believe that the Palestinian Authority is beyond redemption, that it is part and parcel of the Oslo Accords, which were a terrible set of agreements to begin with. They've broken down, and that they need to be done away with. The Palestinian Authority needs to be dissolved. There are others that think that reform is possible, reform is necessary, maybe not what the U.S. has in mind, which I think in this moment, post-October 7th, in terms of reform of the PA, is very much a farce. But there are people that think that this is the structure that's in place, and we need to work with that structure, work within that structure, find new leadership, make it legitimate again through elections, etc.
When we talk about the PA, we are in fact talking about two parts of a sum.
There are the institutions, that the Palestinian institutions that are owned by the Palestinian people, which have been built over time and people paid for in a lot of ways, including in a lot of blood, unfortunately, over time. And it seems from our polling, I'll tell you the exact numbers now, that people like the institutions, they respect these institutions, and they want these institutions to continue to be there and to develop. Now, the other piece of the PA is the leadership, which is the same basically for a very, very long time.
Previous polling, not by the Institute for Social and Economic Progress, which asked the question as to whether the PA should be dissolved or not, often came back with a majority of respondents wanting to see it dissolved. Perhaps interesting, but maybe not useful. Obada and his team asked different questions.
What we did is we provided the material alternative to dissolving the PA. And we asked people about how they would like to see governance moving forward in Palestine. And the options included reform the PA and the PLO, dissolve the PA and let Israel govern, dissolve the PA and let Egypt and Jordan govern like before PA times, or even dissolve the PA and let the governorate, the municipalities, self-govern. And we found that actually 3 in 4 Palestinians, over 70% of Palestinians, wanted to reform the PA and the PLO. And that's where our analysis came from. People want to like the institutions, would like the institutions to become more effective and more developed, but would like to see also change of faces, and they want to practice democracy.
Democracy was, in fact, a big winner from the polling.
In another poll, we asked people if they thought democracy was the most appropriate way to govern in Palestine, or how much they thought democracy is appropriate for governance in Palestine. And 75% said that democracy is the most effective way to govern in Palestine. So people believe in democratic governance and would like to do that. But someone like me hasn't even been able to vote even once in my life. So that's what Palestinians are thirsty for.
The question of, if not the PA, then what, is a serious question. It's very easy to tear something down, but building something new from the ground is a lot more difficult, even more so in the face of an occupation.
I don't know if you dissolve the Palestinian Authority, what replaces it? You know, you would assume that, okay, this is the occupied territories under Israeli occupation, and that therefore Israel would, you know, resume its responsibilities as an occupying power. Well, I don't know if that's necessarily going to happen. And so it's very difficult to imagine what a situation in which the PA is dissolved actually looks like and what would replace it. I also tried to look at the Palestinian Authority at its essence. Yes, it was part of the Oslo process. It came into existence as part of the Oslo Accords. But at its essence, it's a national governing institution that's on the ground in the occupied territory. And it holds, you know, some international recognition and legitimacy. And so I think it may be possible to change it into, you know, a positive structure that exists as part of a larger resistance strategy. Any institution that's going to exist under occupation, under Israeli occupation, is going to be subject to pressure and influence from its occupier, no doubt. But the PA under Mahmoud Abbas has demobilized Palestinian society so that it cannot challenge Israel. I mean, that's one of the things it's done over the last 15, 20 years.
The leadership of President Mahmoud Abbas has been long. He was elected to office in 2005, winning 62.5% of the vote, beating Mustafa Barghouti. Since then, he has not faced the electorate again at the ballot box, and his popularity has slowly declined.
We asked about the popularity of the leaders in both the West Bank and Gaza, and I can tell you that Marwan Barghouti is the only one who people have consensus on. High support in the 70s and in the 80s in the West Bank and Gaza, respectively. In between West Bank and Gaza, he has 77% approval rating. He's the only one who the Palestinian people have consensus on.
Marwan Barghouti, a distant cousin of the previously mentioned Mustafa Barghouti, is a political leader and recognized as a leader of both the First and Second Intifadas. Like many, he once supported the peace process, but became disillusioned. In 2002, he was arrested by the Israelis, who tried and convicted him of murder. Barghouti was sentenced to 5 life sentences. Still in prison today, from his cell, he exerts a lot of influence, both in Fatah and among the wider Palestinian public. There have been multiple attempts to secure Barghouti's release as part of prisoner swaps between the Israelis and the Palestinians. None have worked.
Now, the two other trends that we saw is on the Fatah leaders and the PA leaders, West Bank PA leaders, are more popular in Gaza. They're between 40 and 50, 45, 50 approval ratings in Gaza. They have much lower approval ratings in the West Bank, somewhere between 10 and 20. Whereas Hamas leaders are kind of the opposite. And there's a differentiation there between someone like Sinwar, who is, to me, is more of a like a grassroots, not government establishment, like Haniyeh, for instance, who's more government establishment. Sinwar got over 60% in the West Bank, but 20, somewhere around 22, 23 in Gaza. And Haniyeh got around 44 in the West Bank. And then again, like Sinwar, ran in the 20s, at the beginning of 20s in Gaza. So there are these two trends.
Both Hamas and Fatah have their bases of support across Palestine. And individual leaders within these parties have bases of support. But Obada's polling revealed a further aspect.
In another question, we asked people who would they vote for in a future election. And over 50% of the population said that they would vote for independence. And a much smaller percentage said that they would vote for existing parties.
Part of this desire to see independent candidates is most certainly down to the split between Hamas and Fatah. In 2006, Hamas rose to prominence, winning local elections, leading to a deadly split between Hamas and Fatah, and the former taking control of Gaza.
What I can say is that people are extremely frustrated with the way Hamas and Fatah have dealt with the national division. So first of all, they are responsible for the division. They're responsible for splitting the Palestinian people, not just geographically, also due to the occupation, but also politically. and giving excuses to everybody who does not want Palestinians to be united, does not want Palestinians to get what they want in terms of independence and statehood and sovereignty, to say, well, Palestinians are split. So people are extremely sick and tired of that. And we can see that also in how disapproving the people are of the leaders who govern them. You know, West Bank of Fatah and Gaza of Hamas.
Multiple attempts have been made in the past to reconcile Hamas and Fatah, and they have all failed.
I think reconciliation between these factions would always be welcome, but I don't know if we can get stuck in this debate, you know, over Hamas's inclusion any longer. The problems that came from that were imposed by Israel and the U.S. And has led to the disaster of today. I mean, the reconciliation was not possible in the past because both of these factions derived benefits from their exclusive control over particular territories. And in that sense, they had incentives to not reconcile. So from 2005, after Hamas won the elections, the Israelis and the Americans were able to, you know, punish the Palestinian Authority, cut off money and support and the ability for that institution to function, and really put a lot of pressure on the Palestinians. And this is the function of the Oslo Accords. So I don't think we can get stuck in that thing any longer. I think the demands of today go well beyond and of these two factions, Fatah and Hamas in general. I think you need a total overhaul of the Palestinian representation. You can't be reliant on these two structures any longer.
Neither Hamas nor Fatah have achieved liberation for the Palestinians. In fact, the chance of a meaningful peace process and liberation is diminishing by the day. Israel is, of course, a major reason for this. But the existing and dominant Palestinian parties also shoulder some of the responsibility.
Both Fatah and Hamas have, over that decade and a half, really demobilized Palestinian society, not created room or space for other leaders, other parties and factions to arise. Although, in some respect, they have. I mean, if you looked at prior to October 7th, what was happening in the northern cities of the West Bank, for example, you started seeing the mobilization of different groups. Now, these groups, you know, I don't think were politically coherent with a vision or strategy or anything like that. I mean, it was largely, you know, a collection of younger people that wanted to fight and defend their homes and their refugee camps and so on and so forth. But what you see, though, is in the absence of any movement and willingness to counter the Israelis from the current political leadership, you start seeing other people taking the initiative on the ground outside of those structures. And that was already happening.
The ongoing genocide in Gaza, as horrific as it is, can also be an opportunity for the Palestinian leadership to mobilize its constituents. And yet...
But they've really been absent. I really believe there's no one at the helm at the moment, that we've barely heard from Mahmoud Abbas, if you can imagine that, over the past 6 months, except, you know, when Antony Blinken, the Secretary of State of the United States, you know, heads to Ramallah, and then suddenly Mahmoud Abbas, you know, pops his head up and is willing to deal with the Americans in that sense in whatever goal and agenda they have. But as a leader in a moment of profound crisis, it's been shocking the absence and the lack of initiative at this moment, in which you need somebody at the helm steering and navigating and even taking advantage of the opportunities that have arisen through this moment.
With Abbas and the Israeli onslaught in Gaza, Omar sees a similarity in circumstances with another head of state, Volodymyr Zelensky. He too, like Abbas, is leading a nation that is facing an invasion.
Now, of course, he had, you know, differing dynamics in the sense that the United States supported him and Western Europe came around to support him. But nonetheless, he was going to every capital possible, and trying to rally people in defense of his country. You don't see any of that happening on the side of the Palestinian Authority, on the side of Mahmoud Abbas or any of his cohorts.
Led by the current leadership, the Palestinian Authority is not representing or serving the Palestinian people. One option to move forward might be to look back. When the PA was created, it took center stage, pushing to the side what had been the leading force in the Palestinian movement, the Palestinian Liberation Organization, or PLO.
ever since Yasser Arafat and the establishment of the Palestinian Authority, the leader of the PLO and the leader of the PA have been the same. And this has kind of led to a commingling of sorts, but it's led to a conflation of these two institutions, which has been very detrimental. And over time, the Palestinian Authority kind of subsumed the PLO, and it this was very problematic because, as I said, the PA is a temporal institution. It's very parochial in nature. It was set up to just really govern the occupied territories and take over certain governing responsibilities from the Israelis until the PLO, which remains the sole legitimate representative of the Palestinians, was to negotiate final status issues. And in this conflation, the PLO got hollowed out. It's no longer functioning anymore. And the PA has taken on kind of the responsibilities that it can't take on. Responsibilities of the PLO, it does not represent people, the refugees, for example, and the diaspora Palestinians. It's cut them off from any participation within the Palestinian national movement. That is extremely problematic. So there could be a reform in that sense, at first a decoupling of these two institutions so that the PLO resumes its mandate as the representative, and then, you know, from outside of the territories, from not under occupation, it kind of carries on the liberation movement. So I think you could see those kind of things.
A revitalized PLO could be the answer. Given the space and the correct leadership, it could serve as the flagship for the liberation movement, spreading the message, rallying support, building momentum and pressure. The PA is not a perfect government. There are no perfect governments. But the PA can also continue. It can serve the people of Palestine, but only if it knows and represents what the people need and want. If the current leadership believes they can do this, then it is incumbent on them to ask the people to put their faith in them at the ballot box. Final words to Abada Shataya.
I think what people want is to see institutions that truly represent them and that represent everybody, meaning that the number one question that needs to be answered and the number one reform that needs to be put forward is a democratic process that is inclusive of everybody. So a democratic process that allows the people to say who they would like to see represent them, and then based on that, the representatives of the people will go ahead and implement reforms. But the main thing, the thing that will get the whole machine started, is elections.
This episode of The New Arab Voice was written and produced by me, Hugo Goodrich. Our theme music was by Omar El Phil. The New Arab Voice will be back next week. Until then, you can find all our previous episodes on all major podcast platforms. Our podcast roundup of the biggest stories of the week, the New Arab Weekly, will be out with a new episode on Friday. Don't forget to subscribe to get notified for when a new episode drops. You can find a link in the show notes. You can also check us out on social media at TNA Podcasts for additional content. And you can email us podcast@newarab.com. We also have a weekly newsletter which you can sign up for. Find the link in the show notes. You can subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And you can also rate and review, which helps us spread the word. Don't forget to follow The New Arab on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram for all the latest news, analysis and opinion from the region.